So here we are in Building 20. We're going to talk about Windows Server 2000 App Compat and Windows Vista App Compat. I'm here with some other computer geeks, some fellow geeks. We love computers. Why don't you go ahead and introduce you guys?
Hi, I'm Pat Altimore. I'm a consultant. I work here, for Microsoft in the application compatibility labs here, and work with these guys as well. So go ahead.
Martin van de Bosport, App Compat Labs consultant, teammate Pat, Mark. We've been doing this for, almost 2 years? Almost 2 years, starting with Vista, now doing both Vista, Windows Server 2008.
Cool. So let's just do this last guy over here.
Mark Gaylor, same as those guys.
Okay, same as those guys, nice. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get started and dive in. What are the app compat issues developers need to be aware of with this latest Windows release?
Well, first of all, of course, the big thing, UAC, user account control. Vista as much as Server 2008 because the core OS is the same. UAC being we have the split between the everybody logging into the machine, as an even member of administrator's group, it's no longer real admin. We get two tokens, a filter token and a full token. That is a big thing. That was especially a big thing for Vista. What else?
There's UAC redirection. So there's some things that we did in the OS to try and help with some of the issues that people might run into with UAC or other things. So one of the things that we did is if people try and write to locations that aren't writable by standard user, they're expecting to be writable because they're a member of administrators group. So older applications may not be aware that these places aren't writable, expecting an administrator. Those things, those writes will redirect into the user's directory tree, and we do the same thing with the registry. So that can solve a lot of problems for older applications, but it can also cause some problems if you're not expecting it. It can cause some weird behavior.
So what are examples of some of those areas that a legacy app might write to?
Well, so like the example that we always use for weird behavior is like a game application with an any file on Vista. And if that any file is writing to somewhere under program files, under XP, that's going to be, if everything's working without redirection, all of those users on that machine that play that game, if let's say it's holding high score information, all of those users are going to have a high score on that machine, and it's going to be machine-wide. After this UAC redirection takes place, that high score file is now in each user's subdirectory, so that suddenly becomes no longer machine-wide but per user. It's just sort of an example of how it can change the behavior of an application, and it may cause a problem, it may not, but...
So is this redirection configurable, or does it always redirect to one location?
You can configure the UAC redirection through policies, and it's...
Yeah, so, well, redirection, there's... we do it, the OS does it for legacy applications, and legacy applications then meaning an application that's not been specifically designed for Windows Vista. And then designed for Windows Vista, meaning if you link in a manifest or you put a manifest file next to the executable, then the loader picks that up. The Vista loader picks up that manifest, reads the manifest information out of the manifest file, and if there's a little section in that manifest file that says a requested execution level, well, it's not it, one level up in XML file, then it deems that application as Vista aware. So in that case, we decide, okay, that the developer has designed his application explicitly to be run on Vista. In that case, we don't use this mitigation, so we don't redirect. And there's a couple of others too. There's setup detection. If it's a custom installer setup .exe. 99 out of 100 times, it's going to write to program files. It needs to do something, register COM components in the registry. Well, you need administrative privileges for that. Under Vista, if you double-click such an application and you're running with that filtered admin token, so you're not running as an administrator, that's not going to work. You cannot write your program files, you cannot write in the registry, so that will fail. So what the OS does, it looks at that at the binary. So the loader looks at the binary and sees, oh, there's a string setup or install or update in the resources. And once it finds that, it marks it as an installer, puts a seal on it in Windows Explorer, and then once you double-click it, it pops up as a, you get the consent dialog and you're elevated to an administrator. So that's another kind of mitigation, as Mark mentioned, about file redirection. This is another mitigation to make sure that those legacy applications keep running on Vista and Server 2008.
So if I'm writing the program files as a developer, talking to the developers out there, if I write the program files in a legacy application, if I actually run that legacy application on Vista, let's say, or even Server 2008, where would that file actually get written to? Is it like somewhere under the user's store or?
Yeah, it goes under user's app data virtual store directory. And it will, users and then whatever the user is, and then app data virtual store. There's a couple other ways to change around the virtualization behavior through policy, and there's also a programmatic way, and you can, there's an example of that in Task Manager. So if you go into Task Manager, you can pull up a virtualization column. You can actually set virtualization on or off if you need to for testing on particular processes. There's probably better ways to test redirection. And a good way is just to go out and look in that directory structure and see if you've virtualized something.
There's tools as well. Like Standard User Analyzer is also a tool that you can use to leverage to see where your application might be running as standard user and whether or not virtualization is turned on, and kind of trap the behavior to find out where your application might be requiring administrator privileges, but when it's running as standard user under UAC, it might run into problems.
So we've talked about this mostly in the context of file writes. Does this apply to things like registry operations as well?
Yeah, registry operations redirect also. If you're writing to HKLM, certain keys will redirect under HK current user. So you get the same type of behavior. One of the areas that we see in UAC, I'm probably randomizing here, but with testing is, if you notice in UAC, you'll get a sort of a secure desktop that comes up with a prompt on top of it. And one of the things that we see quite a bit is people trying to do automated testing of their applications. And there's a couple of issues with automated testing in Vista, but one of them is that when you get those secure desktops popping up with the UAC prompt, it's hard to be able to automate testing in that scenario because you can't get to the UAC prompt to automate it through Windows messages. So there's a policy that you can use to turn off that prompting, and there's also a setting in the manifest that you can use to allow you to automate that dialogue. And that's something that we run into quite a bit with UAC and people trying to do testing. One of the things they do is they'll turn it off. They'll turn UAC off and then run their test pass. And obviously, they're not really testing all the different code paths if they've got UAC off, even if they've got a Vista aware application. So a random thought on UAC there.
So you see these fellows looking up at the board quite a bit. You can see we did some brainstorming just to show off here. There are some topics to talk about when it comes to app compat for the latest release of Windows. And to be fair, a lot of these are really cool security enhancements or security-oriented enhancements that make the server a lot more secure. So, I mean, we talked about UAC. What are some other issues that people might run into?
Let's skip IL for now. Session zero isolation is probably a good one. So, in from the change from Windows 2003 to 2008 and from Windows XP to Vista is that previously the first logged in user on, for example, an XP machine shared the same terminal service session as all the empty services running on that machine. So we get kind of a scenario, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely. We love the whiteboard on Channel 9.
Can I wipe this?
Yeah, it's fine.
So where we previously had in the XP, we have session zero, we have all local system, for example, this is an NT service, there's an RNT service running here on the local system. But we also have my little notepad here running that is started by the user logging in. So as you can see, the services running in the local system, for example, or network service or local service, share the same terminal service session as terminal service zero as the first user logging into the machine. So in Vista, so what we did is we took this guy out. We left the services in terminal service session zero, and we put we created for every user logging in. So user logging in always gets one or up, right? So now Notepad will be running here. Security issue, because now we put a big terminal service boundary between every user user application and IT services which are potentially running under a local system, which mm-hmm. is part of TCP, privileged accountable machine. Previously, under XP, with this notepad running here, for example, we could exchange the Windows messages between those two. If this guy would, for example, have a window open UI.
So like via the Windows message pump?
Yeah, for example, yes. This here, it's probably not Notepad, it's probably not the best example, but now Windows messages are blocked by this big terminal service boundary. So this is certainly an app compat issue as well, session zero isolation.
So what type of attacks does that actually mitigate? Why is that an important security issue?
Okay, so I mentioned this guy, this anti-service running in this local system, mm-hmm. right? So if it were to have an UI up here, and I don't have Notepad, but I have IE here, Internet Explorer, and Internet Explorer downloads a rogue ActiveX control here. This guy goes hunt for an anti-service that it knows that brings up a UI, and it knows that has a vulnerability in that UI. Then it sends this special crafted Windows message to this anti-service running its local system. That's Windows message causes a buffer overrun. This guy goes belly up, and this ActiveX control just took over this anti-service running its local system, and this ActiveX control just took over the machine. Mm-hmm. This is so-called shadow attack. I got that right?
Yeah.
So, as a developer, how would I resolve this issue?
You need some other IPC, inter-process communication mechanism, to talk between your anti-service and IE or any other application that if you were to use Windows messages. But note that this is never a good idea in the first place, to pop up UI from your service.
And there's also a WTS send message, which is a terminal service API, but you have to know what specific session to send that Windows message to.
Cool. And you can do create processes.
And create processes. Or use name players.
Yeah, none of those are great solutions. Really what you should be doing is having some sort of a process running in the client session that communicates with the server process. So otherwise you have to figure out if there's multiple users on the box, which session they're trying to get UI in. It's always a pain on any OS.
So have you seen this already in your testing for Windows Server, that there are server apps out there that try to do this session zero communication from a process into a service?
Yeah, we've seen Windows messages type communications fail and other communications potentially fail. The big thing, the thing that everybody points to with regard to this is if you have a service that pops up UI, one of the things that will happen is that UI will just hang there in session zero, and it won't ever be seen by any users in session one plus N. So if the service is actually waiting for a response to that UI that it pops up,
it's now hung.
You can have services that appear to hang. So one of the things that we did, again, as a mitigation with this whole process is, if a service does pop up, if it's A, marked interactive, and B, pops up UI in session zero, you'll get a little box that pops up in Vista and Windows Server 08 that basically says, hey, you've got a service that popped up UI, you hit OK, and it takes you into this sort of a Neverland kind of place where there's it's all gray in the background, and the only thing that you see is the services UI, and then a dialog that says, do you want to go back now? So you can deal with that UI and then go back into the session one. It actually takes you to a session zero desktop.
So is this similar to the secure desktop stuff that you see in CardSpace?
Sort of. The secure desktops are a different entity altogether. So this is actually switching sessions. You are moving to a different desktop, so the experience is kind of similar to switching to a secure desktop. But it's actually even more of a tight boundary than a desktop boundary, because you're switching sessions, terminal service sessions. But so that's sort of the app compat issue everybody points to, is if you've got a service that appears to hang, this could be a culprit, especially if it's interactive.
Cool. So moving along, going down the checklist, what's another issue that we'll run into for Windows App Compat?
Mark, you want to go into versioning? It's your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, how do you feel about the versioning topic?
I wish we could stop talking about versioning. But we keep running into it. It's a really simple problem. Basically, it's people checking, ISVs checking to see if they're running on a particular platform version, doing an equals to check with a version number. And then if they're not running on that platform, they fail. So obviously that's not going to work anytime you get a new platform identity number that gets passed back. So what we would like to see is most ISVs, if not almost all ISVs, just checking if the version is equal to or greater than a particular number, and then keeping running. Because in 99% of the cases, it's not going to be a problem. There are exceptions to that. So there are some ISVs, like firewall ISVs used to be an exception to it before we had a set API for dealing with firewalls. They would pretty much know that they were going to break on the next version of the OS. So if you've got a particular type of application that you know is going to fail, then that sort of makes sense. But 99.9% of the cases, that's not true. And we see this all the time, believe it or not. I mean, I know it sounds like a simple issue, but we see it almost every lab we do. We see some sort of versioning issue, some code somebody forgot about is checking versions. And so we keep talking about it.
Yeah. And it's a simple enough fix. It's a simple enough fix. Why not do it?
Right.
Should we touch on something else?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's keep on going down the list.
I guess it's my turn. I guess I was going to talk about IE, but before I talk about IE7, I'm going to talk about mandatory integrity control. So Martin drew a picture here. I'm going to steal this picture a little bit. I'm going to erase it all, Martin. So mandatory integrity control. So XP world, right? When we'd start a process, when the user would log in, if you were part of the administrators group, process one, process two, all those had the same rights and privileges on the box. They were all running as administrator. Now on Vista and Windows Server 08, we've got this concept of UAC, where we've got people running both as standard user, so this process might be running as standard user, this process might be elevated and running as administrator, so they have different rights. We've got services, and we've got all these different rights and privileges. You don't necessarily want maybe this process that's running as a standard user interfering with something running as an administrator. This might have a vulnerability in some way and do a buffer overrun or something. And then once you take over this process, then this thing running as standard user now has rights to the box. So mandatory integrity control basically gives integrity level to each process and resources on the box. So this would have, if this was standard user here, standard user, this would have a medium integrity level. This one running as administrator would have a high. And basically, the rule of thumb for integrity level is something running at a lower integrity level can't interfere with something running at a high level. So you can't send Windows messages, and you can't do, I'm trying to think what else you can't do.
So this is another form of control that is provided over the typical ACL model
right.
that we
so
have today.
That's discretionary. This is called mandatory, which is basically the operating system puts this integrity level based on where the process came from, how it was started, how it was worked. So
is that check made before ACLs or after ACLs? Yeah, so before we check the access, whether the user has access to the physical file, do we check the integrity level or the security permissions?
Do you know?
This. I don't know if this first, actually.
Yeah,
this
I don't know either.
Well, it's part of it. It's an ACL check as well, right? So.
Yeah,
the results are the same. So if you get, basically, most of the time, integrity levels, you can not only apply them to processes, but resources too. So most of the time, if you're checking against a process that's got a medium integrity level or something, and you're trying to go to a resource that has a high integrity level, most of the time you can read it, but you can't write it. And the result is the same. So if you try and write to it, and you have permissions to write to it with ACLs, but the integrity level is high in your medium, it's going to fail.
You'll essentially get that access is denied.
Right, and it's an ACL check anyway, right? Because this guy's...
It's an ACL, yeah. So it's sort of all the same.
If you an ACL check, it's just the same thing.
Yeah.
So perhaps a leading question, are there components in the OS that actually leverage this technology?
Yeah, so good lead in. So moving into IE7, right, we've got IE7. We can run IE7 on XP. We can run IE7 on Windows Server 2003. What a lot of people fall into is they end up testing IE7, testing functionality with IE7 on an earlier release like XP and say, oh, you know, it works just fine. However, there's a new mode in IE7, which is protected mode. And so what will happen is when you run in IE7 protected mode, IE7 on Vista or Windows Server 2008 actually runs at an integrity level of, if this was IE, this is low. So it's the only process that runs at low. Now, remember that I said anything running lower can't interfere with anything running as higher. So everything running as standard user, that's medium. Everything running administratively is high. And the only thing that runs at low is IE. So therefore, IE basically can't interfere or send Windows messages to any of these other processes. So, so what we'll find is people that have IE applications that try to write to the registry or try to or that maybe start an ActiveX control, all that stuff is running at low and it doesn't have rights to do a lot of these this functionality. So IE7 protected mode goes along with this mandatory integrity level, and we see issues there around people who are using like ActiveX controls or trying to write files or write to the registry.
Yeah, I think the canonical example is you have an ActiveX control and you load it in your, for example, your MFC application.
Yeah.
And that MFC application is, well, MFC application load ActiveX control A, that ActiveX control tries to write to the right thing to do to the C users, Martin directory, works fine. Then that same ActiveX control is then loaded in IE running with low MIG level, that ActiveX control then tries to write to C users, Martin directory. Since all resources on the machine are now acted off with a medium MIG level, you get an access denied there. So that ActiveX control, depending on where it is loaded, will get an access denied or will function fine, and that all is determined by this MIG level.
Just as an add-on, what it's effectively doing is sandboxing itself in terms of resources to only the trusted internet files.
So if I do get a Trojan or a virus that tries to compromise my machine, it'd be protected by those integrity levels to an extent?
To an extent, sure, yeah. And yes. The trusted internet files are all, those resources are all ACLed at a low MIC level, so it does have access to those. And there is some redirection that also goes on with IE. So if you do try to write to certain areas, it can redirect those to the...
Right.
Which is then again, which is a different redirection than the US redirection.
Yeah, another one.
Temporary.
Temporary, yeah. What did I call it?
You said trusted, which can get confused.
Sorry about that.
There's a different thing, trusted. While we're talking about trusted, there is a mitigation for protected mode. If you add the site to trusted sites, what will happen is I will actually run the medium integrity level. You'll see that when you hit that site...
it'll relaunch itself.
Yeah, it'll launch a new browser, and that browser process will be running in medium.
And then protected mode will be off.
Yeah,
see protected mode. Task
you'll actually have two running. One will be in protected mode. So.
Which would then be an excellent mitigation for an activation control. Is then what I mentioned. Loaded in MFC and now in IE will have exactly the same behavior.
So are there other common app compat issues that we run into on the Windows side? On the Windows client side, I should say?
Yeah, we've still got a WRP. Service security isn't really app compat so much, so I'll probably skip that. WRP is Windows Resource Protection. And it's sort of the same thing as, or the same functionality as System File Protection on XP, but it's implemented differently. So some of the APIs that you use to deal with it are different. One of the major things that's different about it is we now protect not only files, but registry and some directories. So there's new APIs that are designed to help you find out if a registry key is protected, because we now do that, whereas we didn't on XP. There's a Get Next Protected File API that's no longer there. And the way that we implemented it on XP, we sort of had this giant cache of files, and we would go replace things that got either changed or moved around. Now we have a cache of files, but it's really specifically there if somebody goes in and modifies something that's going to prevent the machine from booting. Otherwise, we just protect it with normal NT-ACL-DACL mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at like notepad.exe or something, as long as you haven't modified it, you'll see that for full control, for writable access to the notepad.exe, there'll be an entity called Trusted Installer, which is a service entity that example is like if you put the disk in for Windows, it runs under that. Windows Update would run under that. But only those things would have access to modify those system files. It's not designed to be like foolproof. Like somebody can go in if they're an administrator and take ownership of things still.
Mm-hmm.
But it's designed to prevent some kind of oops factor where you've got an application that might inadvertently be deleting something. And by the way, if an application does inadvertently delete something, we'll send back saying that it succeeded, even though we don't allow it to delete. So it's another mitigation to keep things from breaking.
Mm-hmm. So perhaps we should go ahead and take a dive over to server-specific app compat issues. If I'm developing an application for Windows Server 2008, let's say, what are some app compat issues specific to the server platform that I might run into?
I think IS 7 would probably be the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of things we did in IS 7. One, the metabase is now gone. We put some layers in. There's a backwards compatibility that you can still write to. There's a layer where you can still the tools that wrote to the metabase will still function, but the metabase itself is gone. Which then, of course, also means that some of the properties that are that used to be available or not mandatory in the metabase and are now mandatory in the config files, those will no longer work. So it's not 100% mitigation compatibility catch there. But so metabase gone. Something else. There's two different modes: the integrated mode and the classic mode. So now we, with integrated mode, we move the where previously in the classic mode, ASP.NET was an ISAPI extension.
Mm-hmm.
None of the static files, HTML files, CDI files, could use any of the security features or logging features that ASP.NET provides. So now with integrated mode, we move that ASP.NET pipeline right into the IS7 pipeline. So which then means that for HTML files, for static files, for anything else, all other content, all non-.NET content, we also have the modules available, for example, for security or and authentication. It has some implication as well. So from an app compat perspective, some of the events get fired on a different place. Some of the properties are not available in the exact same location. So some of the ASP.NET applications will need some modification when moving from IS6 to IS7, when run IS7 in full integrated mode.
So that metabase compatibility layer, is that something that as an administrator I need to go install afterwards?
Yes, it's one of the optional, how do you call it, sub-features of IS7.
So it's not installed by default?
Not installed by default. As a matter of fact, pretty much nothing is installed by default. If you install Windows Server 2008, none of the roles is installed. Everything has to be installed, IS7, be it, or AD, any of the AD functions, file server, certificate servers, etc.
Wow. It's pretty cool. So, anything else outside of IIS that's important that we should talk about?
Well, there's a new edition called Core, and which is available for both Windows Server 2000 for standard enterprise and for data center.
Mm-hmm.
And Core being it's a very stripped down version, so none of the UI features is in there. It's meant to be only serve as a basic role, so the DHCP
infrastructure role.
Yeah, and one of the big things missing on this core version is .NET. So
so this isn't an application platform.
It's in itself not an application platform. That's correct. Yeah. So tools and agent are certainly supported on the platform.
So if I have an agent that needs to run on Server Core, what are those limitations that I have to develop against?
Well, first of all, as mentioned, there's no .NET available. Second of all, the UI is fairly stripped down, so you need to be, if you install an agent on a machine, it has to be pretty much a silent install. When you install Server Core, you look at the UI, there is basically none, so you log into the machine and what you see is a prompt. That's all you get. So anything you want to do on the machine, you pretty much have to do either from the prompt or you have to do it through remote administration. What else can we mention about Core?
So there's lists of DLLs on MSDN that are stripped out. So if you've got particular questions, most of them have to do with the shell. There's certain things where the UI will run, like regedit, I think, will run. But there are things that don't have dependencies on like common file dialogs and parts of the shell that aren't there. And it's not designed to run those.
So when we say aren't there, we mean those components like explore.exe are nowhere even on the disk?
They're not there, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So how about the clustering stuff? What's that about? Why do we have cluster written up there?
cluster, let's see.
Who's going to take it? Should we draw names?
Yeah, let's draw names.
Burton's the cluster guy, I think.
Uh-oh, you've been volunteered.
As long as he's giving me versioning, he's the cluster guy.
You might want to go to China.
Oh, yeah.
Cluster, yeah. So cluster, there was some confusion about whether it would be fully backup compatible. And it absolutely is. The one thing that's not that's worth mentioning is that the cluster API, the COM automation layer, is deprecated, but it's still available. So no new functionality is added to the cluster automation API. But it's still, if you have scripts that or applications that call into that cluster API, it's still there and it's still functional. But new features will not be added. It's a maintenance mode.
So if I use that older API, will it work, let's say, in an environment where I'm running 2008 and cluster between a 2008 box and a 2003 box, or would I have to use the new API?
No, you would not have to use a new API, but I'm not sure what kind of scenario you're painting here. If you'd want to try to add a 2008 node to a 2003 cluster, that's not going to work.
Okay.
So it has to be either 2008 cluster or 2003 cluster.
Cool. You guys love that topic, huh? Does that come up a lot, or is that...
Well, it's with all the server issues. So the Vista, our Vista gig was pretty easy because we had the Core OS. So we had UAC and MIC and a couple of those other fringe things that came up. With the server, it's a completely different deal because now we have the Core OS plus those other 24 applications that are thrown on there with IIS and RODC and cluster and no core is thrown into the mix and what have you, all the other server applications.
And we're developers. We don't like talking about infrastructure stuff.
Leave that to the IT pros, right?
That's right.
We can get a separate video on TechNet Edge for those geeks. Okay. Yeah. So is there anything else, any other tools that people should be aware of to do this testing or to help them verify whether their app is running or not?
I guess I can touch on Logo.
Yeah,
Logo. So let me stand up again. So Logo, I'll just mention Vista real quick. There's actually, and then I'll go into server. So there's a works with and then certified for. I spelled that right. So certified for. So these are the two different Logo levels. This is both for Vista and server as well. The key points here, this works with focuses on compatibility. So all the tests basically focus on compatibility and making sure that your application installs and runs. Certified for is kind of a quality bar. You know, we push ISVs and anybody that writes software to go for the certified for because it's not only, it basically includes everything that you have and works with, so it's compatible, but also a quality bar as well for reliability, all the, reliability, what am I forgetting?
Installation,
manageability, all the illabilities. But anyway, So on Vista, this was basically both these programs was just a list of test cases, and you ran through the test cases, and if you passed the test cases, then you were certified, or you were works with, and you got the logo.
So is works with like a subset of the certification, the certified form?
On server, yes. On Vista, sort of. They're related on Vista. But let's jump into server now. The cool part about server and why we like talking about server is the fact that the Logo Group created a bunch of free tools that you can run your application through, and it tests, it does all the test cases for you. Like on Vista, you had to get the doc out, and you had to run through the test cases and verify it yourself, and then that's what the testing vendor did as well. The free tools, anybody can download these. If you're if you develop software, you can download it and run it. That's going to be the same tool that the testing vendor is going to run. So if you pass in your own environment, chances are you're going to pass at the testing vendor. So the tools are really cool. Even if you don't go for certification, just running the tools to see if your application is compatible, it's a great thing to do. You can download that from the...
InnovateOn.com,
WindowsServer.com, yeah. Right. So that's why we like talking about Logo. And then also we like people to go for the certification because it gives you that extra... it shows your customers that, you know, you're at some level either in compatibility or quality.
Even if you're not going for certification, the Logo is one of the few areas where we actually get all our teams together and say, what are the best practices that you would like to see on the platform? So if you're looking for, we often get requests for, hey, what are the best practices around X or Y? One of the greatest places to find those are in the Logo test cases doc or the regular Logo doc.
Good point. The only other point I want to make is on server, this is about 20 test cases. This is about 100 test cases. And in the case of server, these 20 are a subset of that 100. So go back and answer your question.
Cool. So there's some other tools that were mentioned throughout this video, like Standard, the SUA tools, and Application Verifier. Where are those tools available? Where would I grab those tools from?
You can get both of them from downloads.microsoft.com. And they're really, the Application Verifier runs in conjunction with Standard, or can run in conjunction with Standard User Analyzer. You can look at Standard User Analyzer as a viewer from some of the verifier tests, but more importantly, on the Vista side, what they do is they'll go through and give you a list. You take Standard User Analyzer, install it, App Verifier, I think .NET Framework 1.1 is a dependency, get all that installed, you'd pull up App Verifier, launch your application from within App Verifier, and then run it through its normal test pass. Once you're done and you close out your app, or you can do it before, you'll get a report of all the different areas, all the different things that your application does that need to have administrative rights to accomplish. So if you're touching something in HKLM, if you're touching something in program files, you'll get those things will come up on the report. Another thing that you'll see, though, is some API calls will come up. So if you're checking for administrator privileges or rights, that call that you make to check for the admin privileges will actually get logged in your Application Verifier and come up so that you can see, because you're not going to get the same results with UAC on as you might want. So it's a potential red flag. So it'll test more than just registry file system access. The other nice thing about Verifier as opposed to just, there's a test within, Standard User Analyzer as opposed to using the Verifier test, is the Verifier test gives you everything. Standard User Analyzer will go through and filter out all the false positives that come from the operating system. Gives you a real friendly environment to look at what's there. And it's available on Vista, and it's part of the Application Compatibility Toolkit 5. It's under the Developer Tools section. You can install it also on server and run your application. The App Compat Toolkit 5 isn't supported on server, so you'll get a message. It will still run, however, so you'll be able to see, you'll be able to get the same type of report as you did on Vista for pretty much specific to UAC issues.
Cool. Well, thanks, gentlemen, for allowing your time to do this video. I know you all are pretty busy with some customers here in the labs doing App Compat testing. So thank you everyone out there for watching. Until next time, we'll catch you later.